I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong.
Iran is threatening to escalate attacks in the Middle East after President Trump gave a primetime address where he provided no timeline to end the war. We'll get response. Then Supreme Court justices appear skeptical of Trump's efforts to end birthright citizenship. Trump broke precedent by attending the arguments in person, sitting in the front row. But he left the court early. We'll air excerpts of the arguments and hear from lawyers involved in the case.
I come out of the court today with the thought of my parents and so many of our parents and ancestors who came to this country seeking refuge, seeking new opportunities, and who relied on the rule that we've had in this country for 150 years, that everyone born here is a United States citizen, all alike.
Then to Israel's new death penalty law, which was designed only to apply to Palestinians. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Iran's military says it's launching crushing, broader, and destructive attacks after President Trump threatened to bomb Iran, quote, back to the Stone Ages, unquote. Trump made the threat in a nationally televised primetime address Wednesday night from the White House. He said the U.S. would continue strikes on Iran for the next 2 to 3 weeks, but provided no timeline for an exit. He said countries that receive oil through the Strait of Hormuz should show courage and seize the waterway.
I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We are going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages, where they belong. In the meantime, discussions are ongoing. Regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because of all of their original leaders' death. They're all dead.
Oil prices soared and stock markets fell across Asia as Trump promised to continue attacks on Iran. Today, foreign ministers from 35 nations, including several EU countries, are holding a virtual meeting to discuss Iran's control of the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. is not among nations attending the meeting, which was organized by the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. On Wednesday, supporters of Iran's government rallied in the streets of Tehran, even as the U.S. and Israel continued bombing.
However much they terrorize, however many of us are martyred, we will still have others to take their place. Our country has countless young people who will stand firm, remain, and continue the path of the martyred.
Meanwhile, Iran is continuing retaliatory attacks across the Middle East. In the United Arab Emirates, officials say shrapnel from an intercepted drone fell on a farm, killing a Bangladeshi national. Qatar's defense ministry says it shot down 2 cruise missiles fired by Iran, while a third missile evaded air defenses and struck an oil tanker leased to Qatar Energy. Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, and Jordan also reported missile attacks from Iran. In Israel, millions of people ushered in the start of Passover Wednesday evening in bomb shelters as missiles fired by Iran and Hezbollah triggered air raid sirens. Israeli authorities said 14 people, including an 11-year-old girl, were wounded when an Iranian missile fell near Tel Aviv. In Iraq, the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad's urging all U.S. citizens to leave leave Iraq immediately, warning Iran-aligned militias may be planning attacks within the next 24 to 48 hours. The warning came after U.S. journalist Shelley Kittleson was abducted in Baghdad after a car chase on Tuesday. The New York Times reports Israeli military officials are privately urging Christian and Druze communities in southern Lebanon to force out Shiite Muslim residents sheltering among them. Human rights groups condemn the plan as ethnic cleansing. This comes as Israel's ordered the expansion of its so-called buffer zone in Lebanon from the Litani River to areas north of the Zahrani River, displacing about a fifth of the Lebanese population. Israel's finance and defense ministers have called on Israel to annex southern Lebanon. More than 1,200 people have been killed in Israeli attacks on Lebanon since March 2nd. The World Health Organization has recorded at least 120 attacks on medical infrastructure across Lebanon, Iran, and Israel since the start of the war. Meanwhile, the UN says three Indonesian peacekeepers killed in southern Lebanon last weekend may be war crimes victims. That investigation is underway.
Repeatedly, these incidents are unacceptable and demand full accountability. Attacks on UN peacekeepers may constitute war crimes under international law.
Russia's military leaders say they've taken complete control of eastern Ukraine's Luhansk region. It's one of four Ukrainian regions Russia annexed in 2022. On Wednesday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky criticized Russia for rejecting a proposed Orthodox Easter holiday truce. He says Moscow instead fired more than 700 drones into Ukraine in daytime attacks targeting civilian infrastructure. At least four people were killed. Meanwhile, the Financial Times reports President Trump's threatening to halt military aid to Ukraine if U.S. allies in Europe don't join efforts to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson and Senate Majority Leader John Thune have announced a two-track plan to end the partial shutdown of the Department of Homeland Security. Under the plan, Republicans would fund most of DHS except ICE and Border Patrol through the end of September. Then they would attempt to fund those two immigration agencies for 3 years through a party-line budget reconciliation bill requiring no Democratic votes. Democrats have refused to fully fund DHS until it implements changes in its immigration enforcement policies. DHS has been partially shut down since February after federal agents killed Alex Preti and Renee Good in Minneapolis during an immigration crackdown. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments Wednesday in Trump v. Barbara, a challenge to President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship. Both liberal and conservative justices expressed deep skepticism of Trump's executive order. Trump became the first sitting president to attend Supreme Court oral arguments, staying for about 75 minutes before leaving. After departing, he claimed in a social media post the U.S. is, quote, the only country in the world stupid enough to allow birthright citizenship. In fact, roughly three dozen countries offer it, from Mexico to Canada. This is Cecilia Wong, the ACLU's national legal director, who argued before the Supreme Court for birthright citizenship.
I come out of the court today with the thought of my parents and so many of our parents and ancestors who came to this country seeking refuge, seeking new opportunities, and who relied on the rule that we've had in this country for 150 years, that everyone born here is a United States citizen, all alike. And I'm confident that the court is going to turn back this president's effort to radically rewrite our 14th Amendment rule of birthright citizenship.
We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. DACA recipient Maria de Jesus Estrada Juarez has returned to California after a federal judge ordered the Department of Homeland Security to bring her back, ruling her deportation to Mexico was unlawful. U.S. District Judge Dina Coggins said her deportation was, quote, a flagrant violation of her DACA protections. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program is supposed to protect undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children from deportation. in February. Estrada Juarez was detained during an interview to obtain permanent residency and deported to Mexico the next day. She's lived in the United States for nearly 30 years. DHS has deported dozens of DACA recipients since Trump's return to office. The Erie County Medical Examiner's Office has ruled the death of Nurul Amin Sha'alam, a visually impaired Rohingya refugee, a homicide. 56-year-old Alam died on the streets of Buffalo, New York, 5 days after Border Patrol officers dropped him off at a Tim Hortons coffee shop that had already closed for the evening. The medical examiners determined the cause of Alam's death was complications of a perforated ulcer precipitated by hypothermia and dehydration. Alam had arrived in Buffalo under legal refugee status in December 2024 before he was taken into custody last year following a trespassing incident. Dr. Gail Burstein is the Erie County Commissioner of Health.
Of death. The medical examiner's office determined it to be homicide, which refers to death resulting from volitional or through a choice or decision or an act of another. And so this includes negligent acts or omissions or inaction.
And for the first time in over half a century, humans are headed to the moon. NASA's Artemis II mission blasted off from Florida's Space Coast on Wednesday evening with four astronauts aboard on a 10-day voyage that'll take them around the far side of the moon and back to Earth. The crew includes the first person of color to visit the moon, pilot Victor Glover, and the first woman to make the trip, mission specialist Christina Koch. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Iran is threatening to escalate attacks in the Middle East after President Trump delivered a primetime address in which he threatened to bomb Iran back to the Stone Ages. Global stock prices tumbled and oil prices jumped after Trump vowed to continue striking Iran, even though he claimed Iran had already been decimated militarily and economically.
The progress we've made, I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong.
President Trump also repeated his threat to attack Iranian civilian infrastructure, which is considered a war crime.
If there is no deal, we are going to hit each and every one of their electric generating plants very hard and probably simultaneously. We have not hit their oil, even though that's the easiest target of all, because it would not give them even a small chance of survival or rebuilding.
Earlier in the day, Trump spoke at an Easter lunch event at the White House. He gave attendees a preview of his primetime remarks.
And tonight I'm making a little speech at 9 o'clock, and basically I'm going to tell everybody how great I am. What a great job I've done! What a phenomenal job! What a phenomenal job I've done!
We're joined right now by two guests. Spencer Ackerman is a Pulitzer Prize and National Magazine Award-winning reporter, the author of Reign of Terror: How the 9/11 Era Destabilized America and Produced Trump. And the Forever Wars newsletter, his latest piece headlines, So You Lost a War to Iran. Behrouz Ghamari Tabrizi is a fellow at the Center for Place, Culture and Politics at the CUNY Graduate Center. He was previously professor and chair of the Department of Near Eastern Studies at Princeton University, the author of several books, including Islam and Dissent in Post-Revolutionary Iran, as well as a memoir about his years on death row in Evin prison in Tehran called Remembering Akbar, Inside the Iranian Revolution. His latest book, just out this year, is titled The Long War on Iran, New Events, Old Questions. We begin with Behrouz Ghamari Tabrizi. Thanks so much for joining us again. Why don't you respond overall? Many people were waiting with bated breath to see what President Trump was going to announce in his primetime address, the first one since the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran. What did you make of what he said?
First of all, thank you for having me back in the show. I think it was a very anticlimactic kind of speech, and as we expected, he structured his speech around lies and delusions, I think, and he did not add anything new about what we already have heard from him. And I think possibly the most important part of this speech last night was the timing of it. And this was a speech that one should have expected to hear before the start of the war, because it was mostly about justification of the war. And my take on it is that it was, in a sense, a kind of admission to defeat in the war of narratives. And I think that they feel, the White House feels, that they need to go back to point zero and to speak about why are we in the war with Iran, and what the objectives are, and what the end goal is, and how we can find an off-ramp to end this war. And so, yeah.
And Spencer, I mean, one of the things, as Behrouz just said, it's not only that Trump seemed to repeat without any variation at all various comments he's made in the past weeks on social media, but some of the key issues, if you could talk about some of the key issues he did not mention, including the surge of U.S. troops, the military personnel who are en route to the Middle East now.
Indeed. Good morning, Nermeen. Good morning, Amy. Lovely to be here with Behrouz, especially. I'm going to learn a lot from this conversation. This was a speech that we shouldn't normalize, even for Trump. This was a cavalcade of lies on top of the delusions and the incoherence there. But most importantly, as you mentioned, while Trump is trying to domestically reassure his base and more perhaps to the point, reassure markets that he hasn't just plunged the United States and the world into a compounding economic disaster, is that there is an aircraft carrier with 6,000 sailors, three destroyers on its way. It will be the third such carrier strike group committed to this conflict, as well as the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit and elements of the 82nd Airborne that are on their way for purposes that Trump neither explained nor even really mentioned at all. So while he is trying to kind of, as he has frequently throughout this conflict, send a message that this is not a forever war, this is not an open-ended conflict, this is not like those other foolish presidents in the Middle East, what he's doing is entrenching this conflict ever deeper without any mechanism to resolve it. While Trump emphasized that, or attempted to emphasize, that he has been consistent in his explication of what American goals are in Iran, which he hasn't. He's been all over the place. He called the very first day of the war for an Iranian uprising to overthrow the Islamic Republic, which hasn't happened and frankly doesn't seem like it's going to happen. What in fact has happened is that Iran has changed the entirety of this conflict. It has pivoted this conflict onto its own territory and its own goals, and the United States does not have a military mechanism to redress that, primarily the throttling of the Strait of Hormuz.
And so, Behrouz, you had mentioned that there is a risk. I mean, so as Spencer said, there are thousands and thousands of troops on their way to the Middle East. You'd said one of the possibilities, what these troops would do there, is to try to take one of the islands, Iran's islands, and that not necessarily Kharg Island, which is the only one one really hears about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the taking over of Kharg Island is extremely dangerous and risky. And it would threaten not only the stability of the region, but I would go as far as to say that it would threaten the stability of the entire world order. And we are indeed in that moment that this instability of the world order is at the table. And Iranian side knows this very well, that they hold that card in their hands. And if they can't compete militarily with the U.S., they can really play that card in a very, very effective way. My sense is that, you know, the invasion of Khark Island is highly unlikely to happen unless the U.S. feels so desperate that there are no other alternatives available to them. There are other smaller islands that are disputed between Iran and the UAE, the two Tomb Islands and Abu Musa, which don't have oil reserves, but they have strategic significance, and less risky for the U.S. forces to land there and declare that they are invaded that island. But even that would escalate the war to such degree that it would be out of control of any of the players who are now engaged in this war.
Beirut, Iran's president, Pezeshkian, sent a letter to the American people hours before President Trump gave his speech last night, asking if this war is putting America first. Tell us who, where Pezeshkian is. Where does he fit into what's happening right now?
Pezeshkian was quite an unlikely candidate to become Iran's president. He was a member of the Iranian parliament, and when he nominated himself to run again for re-election, the government basically disqualified him from running for the parliament. But a year later, he was qualified to run for the president. So you get the picture that how unlikely president he is. And he is not the key decision maker in Iran at this point, but he has a very important role in keeping the entire political system on the same level, and he's a good communicator with Iranian people. He's a man of the people, so to speak, and I think that his discourse, his political conversation with Iranians, although he comes across as a very naive kind of politician, but nevertheless, I think he's opening some space for his political position.
Why
inside
hasn't
the
Israel tried to kill him? I mean, they've killed so many of Iran's leaders, one after another.
Do you really want me to speculate on that? I don't know. But, I mean, I think, first of all, they've tried to kill him. He was injured in June attacks, and he was severely injured, and he was limping for a while after June war. And they did try to kill him. I don't know how they are keeping him safe at this moment, but nevertheless, you know, Israel did try to kill him. And I think that he is not in that position of game changer in Iran at this point. Israel and the U.S. are mostly attacking, Israelis mostly, are attacking people who are in the position of game changing. Like Ali Larijani, or I read yesterday that they attacked Kamal Kharrazi, who was the former foreign minister in Iran, and he's severely injured.
Do you think the Supreme Leader Mojtaba is in the country? Do you think he's alive?
I don't know. I don't know. And I think that it's possible that they are playing this kind of game with Mojtaba, that you know, he's acting as a hidden imam, because that hidden imam has a very significant role in Shi'i theology, and whether or not he's injured and he can't appear in public, or this is a political game to keeping him hidden, I'm not quite sure, but we'll find out soon.
And Spencer, just to go back to the speech and Trump's kind of shifting objectives for this war, one of the things he said is that he terminated what he called the disaster of the 2015 nuclear deal because it sent billions and billions of dollars to Iran. First of all, if you could explain that. But then he said nothing at all about the fact that just in this week, he allowed Iran to sell oil, thereby enabling Iran to earn billions and billions of dollars.
Yes, so let's peek behind what actually is going on here, because going back to the 2015 deal, one of its primary terms was that Iran would get out from under the sanctions regime that was put in place precisely to have leverage in order to produce the nuclear deal. And that reaped Iran something around $1 billion worth of sanctions relief. That was its own money that the United States had basically frozen. The rejectionists for this deal, the people who would never allow this deal to get to yes, precisely so it would take away the option of attacking Iran militarily, raised an enormous hue and cry about how now this was funding the so-called terrorist regime in Iran. What Trump has done to reassure the markets after launching this very ill-thought-out war was provide for Iran to sell oil once again. Oil, of course, is a global commodity. It can't really be throttled in one place or another without affecting the price everywhere. And so now Iran stands to benefit by the terms of the current price of oil that Trump and Israel have forced to go up, something like $13 to $14 billion, vastly, vastly beyond the sanctions relief they got in the 2015 deal.
And if you could also, this was a very crucial point and has been a major issue in the war, Iran using the Strait of Hormuz to retaliate against Israel and the U.S. Last night, Trump claimed that the Strait of Hormuz would, quote, automatically open once the U.S. leaves, and simultaneously urge countries reliant on oil from the region to go to the Strait and, quote, just take it. And he also urged countries, of course, to buy U.S. oil instead. So your response to that, and in particular this idea of the Strait of Hormuz, which for the longest time he was saying that's one of the objectives, we have to have this Strait open, despite the fact that prior to the war the Strait was open, so he's trying to resolve an issue that the war itself created. And the fact of, you know, the implications of Iran's effective blockade of the Strait, which we're already seeing the effect in so many parts of the world.
You can see how even just summarizing the circumstance brings out not just the absurdity, but the tragedy and the horror of the misjudgment that this war is predicated upon. The most important thing to understand about the Strait of Hormuz, one of the world's most important energy and commercial waterways, is that Trump has no military way of forcing it open. Everything that he is about to do, the war crimes that he has promised, when we hear both him and the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, talk about destroying Iran's defense industrial base, what they mean is they will bomb every civilian industrial target that they can find, much as they bombed the girls' school at the outset of the war, and claim this is some kind of military target. All of this is going to be designed to force enough pain on the Islamic Republic that it opens the Strait of Hormuz back up. That's because there is no way that the United States has to force it otherwise.
I want to ask you, Spencer, about the role of Israel. Does Trump's incoherence, and let's make no mistake about it, when someone is completely unpredictable, that gives them a great amount of power. But does that chaos serve Israel? And what is the relationship here with Israel fighting this war on so many fronts, attacking Iran, attacking Lebanon, moving higher and higher into Lebanon, and of course, continuing to kill people in Gaza? And a number of Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank during this time.
Starting around the time of the Israeli assassinations in 2024, spilling out from the Israeli genocide in Gaza, a great deal of people within Israel and within Israel's support base inside the United States believed that they had an opportunity to transform the Middle East by permanently disabling or at least structurally weakening Iranian power, not only in its broader ambits in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen, and in Iraq, but now in Iran itself. That's what Israel is going for. Israel is not simply going for a weakening of Iran. What it was hoping to do was collapse the Islamic Republic and bring Iran into some sort of failed state situation. Some of the indications from media and from political statements from Israel seem to indicate that they know they can't bring Trump into that open-ended